is a podcast presentation of Hillside Four Square Church in Reno, Nevada. Today's message is called Hands and Feet and a Good Heart. Krista Gomez is addressing getting out of the church and into the neighborhood.
There's a theory called Maslow's Hierarchy of Needs. Will you just raise your hand if you've heard anything about this theory? All right. Kind of goes like this, and I'm going to try to draw quick because I wasn't going to draw it. So basically, you kind of have these different levels. And I haven't been to school for a while, so I'm going to cheat. So down here, you just have basic needs. Just basic food, shelter, water, whatever. Then you go to safety, belongingness, and love. Esteem. And I actually put one more little tier here, and then you have self-actualization. You all should know that Maslow was not a Christian. In fact, he did not like Christians. And in fact, he was very much against Christianity. However, this theory is really how our social services, our world, our, you know, the place where we are, this is really how we deal with resources. This is how we in the world deal with needs. When I was at social services, this is what we did. We went here. And we went here. We really, you know, this is really where we addressed all of our resources on all of our needs. And because what I think now is there's a couple reasons for that. And a couple of the reasons are that, you know this. This is tangible stuff. People don't have rent money, you give them rent money. People don't have food, you give them food. People don't have, you know, people have drug addictions, you send them to rehab. So these are all things that are very tangible things. They're like, we have control. It's like we can, all right, we've got this checked off, we got rent checked off, we got groceries checked off, we got childcare checked off, we've got all these things checked off. So these things down here, you know, they're very tangible. They're very, you know, it's like we know what to do with that stuff because we can check them off a list. When you start getting into these kind of things, they're not as tangible. It's not like you can, you know, you can't buy somebody belongingness. You can't buy somebody love. You can't buy somebody these kinds of things. And so it's harder to sort of address these sort of things. But in my, you know, humble opinion, which is not expert, these things are the most important. I almost think that sometimes you just kind of bounce back and forth here, you know, a little bit. You just bounce back and forth. If you don't have some sort of belongingness and love, if you don't have some kind of support, if you don't have people who are invested in you and things that, you know, matter to you and things that you're a part of and things that, you know, you matter to, you know, I mean, this part is important. And so that's where I think we as Christians, we kind of have an edge, but it's a very intangible edge, right? Because if you're out in the world and you're checking off things on your list and you have funding sources for direct resources and direct needs and direct things, you can check all those off the list. And so insert Jesus, you know, you kind of come up here pretty quickly. And there's a couple things to that. Usually, you know, when you get saved, when you become part of a church, there's the more tangible of you have people around you that love you. You have people around you that care for you. You are involved in a support system, a system that, you know, that wants good things for you, that can provide good things for you. The other part of it is the completely intangible part of you just have Jesus. You just have the Jesus, the God who created the universe, the God who gives us all the things that we need, the God who gives us peace and provision and protection and all of everything. You have that inserted into your life. There's no tangible way to quantify that, which makes people in direct resources and people in research very nervous. There's no way to quantify that Jesus factor. You know, we hear about the Jesus factor in a lot of areas. We hear about the Jesus factor in money, or we hear about the Jesus factor in, you know, in sort of this, in protection or in provision. We hear about this stuff all the time. And there's that Jesus, if you just put Jesus in here, it kind of takes you, you know, it takes you up and it takes you to a place where you get to a different levels, and I think you get there faster. And I actually have seen people who I've worked with in direct service in my casework where they were in rehab or they had, you know, different, a lot of, you know, obviously CPS, there's people that you run with a lot of issues. So they really kind of move up this ladder fairly quickly. And, you know, when we don't have anything tangible behind it, it makes your supervisors and everybody really nervous because why did they just jump up like that? Why are they all of a sudden so successful? And where's the, you know, they can't happen that fast. And that doesn't fit with the research and that doesn't fit with the timelines. And so there's all those things. So that Jesus factor is very real. It's also very intangible, which makes people very nervous. So you've got all of those things. So I wanted to share with you this because we are dealing with systems where the world, this is what the world knows. This is how the world deals with the lives that we live, the kind of things that we come into encounter. This is stuff that they can mark off and check off, and this is stuff that they know. So this is how they kind of live. And then you put the Jesus factor in there, and it's different. So what I'm telling you is when I say the world and the church kind of go like this, they do kind of go like this because it's like opposing magnets, you know? They quite don't know what to do. The world doesn't quite know what to do with that Jesus factor that kind of, you know, throws a wrench into their resources and their statistics and things like that. Does that make sense? Oh, good. That's good. So this next one, I don't know if anybody can actually see this over here, but I'm going to try to draw a little systems theory now. So systems, this is what systems theory looks like. There's three levels, kind of looks like a bullseye. Actually, I'm not even going to draw it because it's going to take a long time and we're going to run out. So inside here, it's a bullseye. So you guys see it's kind of like a bullseye graph a little bit. And there's a lot of ways to use a systems theory. So if you get that, there's a lot of ways to use a systems theory. I mean, people use it in a lot of different areas, economics, all kinds of different things. And so you've got this. So this is social systems theory. So I'll get off systems in just a second, off of theory. But for the purposes of this speech, what I'm going to show you is our systems theory. This particular graph has to do with how many churches we're dealing with as far as Foursquare. Now, Foursquare obviously is not the only church, and there's a lot of churches and a lot of entities and a lot of stuff happening. And so, but for purposes today, we're just going to stick to Foursquare because we can get off on all kinds of tangents. And as much as I would love to, I do not have that much time and you do not have that much patience. So you've got this little circle right here in the middle. This is your micro level. Your micro level has to do with your immediate community. And depending on kind of which, how many levels of systems you're looking at, you actually would have one in the very middle, and that would be your direct community, like your, like our direct church family. So in our micro level of this, you know, this talk, we have six Foursquare churches sort of in our immediate area, three in Reno Sparks, Spanish Springs, Carson City, Dayton, and Susanville. Those are the ones that I could kind of think of right offhand. So in our immediate area, we have our six churches, which are, you know, I say little, but I shouldn't use that word because it's good, and I don't mean to demean it in any way. Nationally, in the U.S., we have about 1,750 churches. And so in our 1,750 churches in the U.S., then we are doing the work that we have. We have churches. We've got different things that are going on. We've got those things. And then internationally, in the entire world, we've got 66,000 churches. And so this is kind of where I wanted to address, because I love that Foursquare does missions. I love that Foursquare cares about the people in other nations and other places. I love that Foursquare cares and wants to make sure that everybody knows and loves Jesus. I love that they want everybody to hear about Jesus. I love that they want everybody to know Jesus and be saved, because that in itself is impactful. That in itself is the best thing that we can hope for, is that people would know Jesus. The place where I guess my heart is, and the place where I really would hope to see some kind of foundational change, I guess, would be that when we are talking, when we're looking at the systems graph, we have the opportunity in our six churches, in our 1,750 churches, not only to get people to know Jesus, but also to affect change in our communities and our societies. And to do that, we have to be active in our communities and societies. We have to insert ourselves, engage with systems, get ourselves to the place where we are not just groups of people within four walls. We are not just groups of people that, you know, are that meet together. We are groups of people that go out into the community. We are groups of people that affect change in different elements, in different areas that are outside just the four walls of this place. We are a very core group of people. We're a very good group of people. We have a lot of good things in common. We use common language. We have common tradition. We have all of the common things that you need to sort of have a tight-knit cultural group. We would be considered, our church would be considered, our denomination would be considered like a tight-knit cultural group. And so we have all of the elements, actually, to get that going, keep it up, have it be successful. And so in no way am I saying that we should relegate our core system group to go do other things. In fact, you cannot do that. You cannot undo or leave this place, these walls, this group, this culture. You cannot leave this alone. If you do, you cannot effectively, as a group, go out and do other things, because it takes this step to do the next step. And so I say that because when there's opportunity to serve here, when there's opportunity to do things here in this church with childcare, with cafe, with small groups, with meeting with Louie and Joni about different counseling things, with outreach, with childcare, with all of the things that we do, all of that stuff is so important, because without that, we are not a core group that can move forward and do other projects. We have to have that element. Otherwise, it's like what's happened to the international church, where the church used to be its own. The church was the original social services. The church was the original place where everybody had all of their needs met. We were the first food bank, and that was all developed in Acts. And they set up a whole separate ministry just for a food bank. So they had to have that. And then we were the first, I always say Jesus was the first like women's right activist, right? I mean, he was, because, and I'm all about women's rights in kind of an interesting way, you know. Anyway, that's a whole different subject. And so Jesus was the first, you know, I mean, he interacted with the woman at the well. He did all of those things. So, you know, he was the first women's rights activist. They had environmental laws. If you can think of environmentally, they had laws in the Bible, and they talked about, you know, how many years you could plant in soil and what you should do with, you know, the leftover crops and all of those things. They had all of that stuff was taken care of in the Bible. And so church was the original social services, everything. And we took care of everything. And the really Christianity is where justice originated. It's where social class equalization originated. It's where family relationships, where husband and wife relationships and all of that stuff, that used to be a really different mix than what it is now. And so church is where all of that stuff originated. And to do that, it really requires us to live our lives and do all the things that we do and go to work and be married and have kids and do all of the things that we would do normally. But it also involves us giving above and beyond that and doing more than that and being involved with each other, which, you know, is its own thing. And then on top of being involved with each other to keep this core group strong, it also involves us reaching out into the community. So with that, our resources have now been hijacked. That's what this says. If you saw a slide, that's what it would say. Resources have been hijacked. They've been hijacked by everybody else. So the rest of the world has kind of hijacked our world. So if I'm looking at a resource list that, say, social services would use, what you would see is that there would be about 90% of resources that were funded and controlled by non-Christian organizations, and about 10% that would. And you have the big ones, right? Reno Sparks Gospel Mission, awesome. You have Salvation Army, really great. You've got some of the college ministries. You've got, you know, Catholic Community Services, really good stuff. We have good stuff. But when you're looking at the lists of things that are available, there's really not a lot that's controlled by Christians. The other problem, and I'll just touch on this briefly, is once, if you're asking for money, the problem with money is as soon as you try to get money from most sources, there are some sources that you can get money from, but you then cannot be a church organization. You can't do religious kind of stuff and get money from the government. For the most part, there's exceptions, but it's hard. And so we've kind of succumbed to, like, we kind of hang out here. We kind of hang out in these four walls. And so we hang out in these four walls when really what we've seen in other countries is that when we hang out, when we kind of shrink back into what we're comfortable with in our comfort zones, and we're not going out to where people need us, but we're waiting for them to come in here, what you see is we lose our influence. We have less and less and less influence as a church because we do not go out and seek out people out into the community. So instead, we're waiting for people to come here. And let's just be honest, when somebody comes here and they have no reference for church, it's a little weird when they're eating God's body and they're drinking God's blood and they're doing those things. Those are very good traditions to us, and we understand them, and they're good. However, it's a foreign language to somebody else who comes into this system. So we're waiting for people to come into these four walls, to come into our system, to come into what we're comfortable with, when what we, in my opinion, what we should be doing and what we're trying to do is to go out and to meet people and to meet needs of people out into the community. And there's a couple ways. There's a couple things. When we're thinking of meeting people's needs, it's always sort of the easiest thing to meet people's needs in a very tangible way, in a way that, you know, is, you know, let me help you pay your rent. Let me help you buy food. Let me come and take you shopping. Let me kind of do these things for you. And the other thing that I think that we as Christians miss out on a lot is that there's another way to do it, and there's the whole culture of people who aren't necessarily in tangible need. They're, you know, our college professors or our friends that aren't Christian or the friends that we work with or those kinds of people. There's all of those people that we can affect change with as well. And I was thinking about the speech, and in my head, all of the pretty slides were up, and so it was very easy to kind of get all this stuff together, and so it made a lot more sense. But I have two stories from you. Both are from college. So I got my degree in social services, which is an extremely liberal, you know, very, very, you know, kind of anti-Christian place. And two quick stories are, one was, it was probably my first semester in school. And I had just gotten saved. So I was 22-ish when I got saved. And so we're in a science class. So, you know, here's our beginning 101 science class. And we are in this huge hallway, this huge forum. And we have to do these presentations on whatever. It was like life and evolution and all of this stuff. Well, this woman, my teacher, had not said anything about Jesus. About the guy who created the whole world, about the guy who created the entire universe, about our Redeemer, our Protector, our Provider, our Provision. I mean, had not said a word about him at all. Well, I was a little incensed by that, and I'm a little outspoken sometimes, and only sometimes, yes. And so I'm in a group with a couple of other people, and they're like, you know, well, we can say this and we can say that. And I'm like, there's a creator. I said, I had gotten saved at the other Foursquare church in Sparks. And they had just this evolution speaker that came in and kind of did all this research breakdown about evolution and creationism and all of that stuff. So I had all these little fun facts kind of fresh in my head. Anyway, so I said, what about this research, and what about that research, and what about this research? And they were like, well, yeah, all of that's true, but you can't say that. And I'm like, I'm the spokesperson for the group. I'll say whatever I want. And I have this problem sometimes where I can be a little bit, maybe a little bit spiteful, like a little bit. And like, you know, I'm going to say something about Jesus, you know, and so I said, and so I remember this so clearly now, and then I think back on it, and it's one of those things where you think, did I do that? Is that really, like, did I really do that? So I'm in this big hall, and I'm 22 and newly saved, and you know, like, if, you know, when you're newly saved, you're a little bit, you know, you're a little weird, a little bit, And so I said something about being, you know, create, you know, the world being created by a divine creation, whatever. And I said something about Jesus. Well, anyway, later on, and everybody was like, I don't know what to do with this girl, you know? And then later on, I had these little tracks, which I don't do tracks, and I'm not a track kind of girl, but I'm like, you know what, just read this stuff, you know, and just read it. And I gave it to my teacher, and she wasn't very happy with me. And the next semester, I found out my friend Kelly, who had the same teacher as me, it was a year or two later, the teacher said at the very beginning of the whole class, you know, you are not allowed to speak of creationism in this class. You are not allowed to say anything about it. It's not a correct theory. It will not be something that happens in this classroom. You will not talk about it. And when we do presentations, it is not an option to speak about creationism in this class. And I'm like, oh, Kelly, that's my fault, I'm sure. And so it's like you have that, and then, I have all kinds of college stories. I could stand up here and tell you the college stories about, like, fighting with religion in college for hours. The other one was about, you know, it was all about sex. And so there's statistics on Christian sex. Did you know that Christian sex is really good? Yeah. It's really good. We have some of the highest contentment and sex rates in the world. Christian people, Christian women, Christian men. So I'll just say that and I'll leave it at that because I could talk about that some more too. But one of the things, Louie's like, shush. Yeah. So one of my teachers was all about, I had a couple, you know, we should do 5-year marriage contracts instead of, you know, lifetime commitments. It doesn't make any sense that you'd have to do these lifetime commitments with marriage. And then we had this other one. And so this other teacher I had, it was a guy, and he was like, you know, it's ridiculous to think that people should only have sex with one person in their whole lifetime. And so we had this whole debate. And I just thought, you know, statistically, Christians have some really good stuff. Christians have good, for the most part, and there are exceptions, and we kind of have a pretty high divorce rate even along with the world. But, you know, we have really good statistics about sort of how we live our lives and how we do family, about sex, about kids, we have really good statistics that go along with that kind of stuff. So we don't even have to be weird when we're injecting those kinds of things into conversations, because statistically we've got that stuff taken care of. So when I say that we need to interject ourselves into conversations, we don't just need to be around and relevant when we're trying to provide services. That's important. We have to do that. To have some sort of influence in our culture, we have to be present in the culture. We don't have to just provide money for other people to do it. We have to have our values, our traditions, our things present in the culture in ways that glorify God, but that make sense in our culture, which there is a way to do it. There is a way to do it, I'm convinced, because God's a big God. He wouldn't have given us all of this great stuff if we weren't supposed to use it within our culture. So it's not just about doing basic needs stuff. It's about interjecting ourselves into a conversation. We have really taken ourselves out of a conversation. Christians have taken themselves out of a conversation. We see where that's gone in other cultures and other countries, where the church really there's not a lot of relevance that we as Christians, as a cultural group, have, you know, in those societies anymore. And we're losing more and more of our influence here. And so it's important that we don't. So, this was my last slide. It's going to be so cool, you guys. It was going to be this slide where it was like all of this stuff. This is what we deal with. So it's homelessness, injustice, poverty, domestic violence, abuse, discrimination, ignorance. Sometimes ignorance comes in direct correlation with education. I don't know if you knew that or not. Abuse, poverty, lack of hope, lack of self-worth, and lack of love, which are really your core issues. Those right there are your core issues. That is what you're going to have the most problem with. When you're dealing with lack of self-worth, lack of love, and lack of hope, that is where I think that I've seen when I'm talking to people, that's the worst. because they don't have any, you know, it's like, what does it matter? I'm not going to do anything now because it doesn't matter, you know. I'm tired. My husband left me. My kids are doing this. My kids are on drugs. You know, I have no money. I have no food. And sometimes that have no money and have no food are so much in the background other than my husband left me to go to do, you know, to go be with somebody else or whatever their issue is. It's like their whole lives are just done. You know, I mean, that's, it's like they've been kind of taken away. They've been hijacked. And so they have this lack of hope and lack of love. And that's sort of the most important thing. That stuff that we as people, it's like we can address those things and we can be there for people, but we can't be there for those kinds of issues if we're not present in those cultures and in those societies. So you're like, great, Trista, well, we go to Pat Baker Park. How are we going to do all of those things? Well, I tell you what, we're supposed to be at Pat Baker Park. And there was a long time when I kind of tried to figure out what was doing, because like Louis said, like I have this really far-reaching vision that might take 25 years to fulfill. I mean, I don't know how long it will take. Maybe God will interject and he'll let me do it in the next two. I don't think so. I've learned a lot in the last 3 years. I'm assuming there's a lot more to learn, so I'm thinking that, you know, all of it won't come to fruition for a while. But I forget why I said all that now. Pat Baker Park. Yes, you guys, we're going to Pat Baker Park. We give them lunch, we give them backpacks, we play games with them, but you know what else we do? We love them. We love them, we give them hope, we give them good things, and, you know, this has always been the sort of the impetus here. You know, we give them good things. We don't just give them as much stuff as we can buy at the dollar store. We give them good things because it communicates to them that we love them. It communicates to them that they matter. It communicates to them that we want, that there's more for them just than, you know, what they can themselves go down to the dollar store and buy. And sometimes the only way to communicate things to people is in the language that they understand. And that's why I say it's so important to have a kind of a common language, a common culture, a common theme, because you have to speak the language that they speak in order for them to get to a place where they'll listen to you. That is very, very, very important, you know, and things to a lot of the people that we're going to see, that matters to people. And so that's why we don't just give a bunch of just whatever, a bunch of garbage, because we, you know, that's a tangible thing that we have with them, and they don't have any relationship with us yet. It's fine to go and, like, if I was to go and give Tim, be like, hey, Tim, I've got a leftover $5, you know, Starbucks card, and you can have it. And he'd be like, thanks, Trista, I'll go to Starbucks, and I'll get it. Well, that's not going to matter to Tim if I give him, like, my leftover Starbucks card, if I have no relationship with him. In fact, he might get mad at me even if I gave him the Starbucks leftover card. But he would know that, like, we'd have a relationship, so we would cover some of that. Well, why did you give me a leftover Starbucks card? Or, you know, there's relationship covers a lot of stuff. We don't have relationship necessarily there. We're starting to because we've been there so many times. But we want to communicate to them that we love them. We want to communicate to them that, you know, that they matter, that what they need matters to us. And so that's why the very basic, kind of goes on Maslow, the very basic way to show them that is with the basic need kind of things. And then later on, you guys want to know what we could do, what other stuff we could do, which would be really fun. We could adopt kids that are 18 and are no longer in foster care. We could have mentoring mom programs for Casa de Vida. We could have... we can have a lot of stuff. I got a lot of stuff in my head, unfortunately. I also don't have six arms or three brains. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that we can do. And as if we as a core group can kind of get together and move forward on these things, then we as a core group can influence the world that we live in, can influence our community, and can have impact in the people's lives that are around us. And so... That's really what I do. That's what I'm hearing. Louis hears about all the time. He's like, yes, I know how you feel. I think that I know. He doesn't actually do that to me. He's like, Trista, yes, I know. Yes, you can do that. Yes, you know, go ahead. And so anyway, that's why we do these things. That's why. And, you know, really, we're one of the only churches in this. Well, I won't say that. Our church, we are fortunate to have a very supportive outreach ministry here. And that is not as prevalent in other places and other churches. And that's because it comes along with sacrifice. And it's because sometimes that is very, it's inconvenient. You know, it takes resources away from other things to do things out in the community. And so we are fortunate enough to let, you know, I mean, Louis and Joni, they let us have those things, but that's not necessarily the case all of the time in all of churches. And so, anyway, that's my second annual, you know, outreach speech in a different version than I'm sure you've guys heard, you know, another time. But this Saturday is the outreach, and we do the outreach for a purpose, and we give these gifts for a purpose, and we organize this stuff for a purpose. And this stuff is important to us because we want to communicate to a community that they are important to us. And so I would encourage you, you know, come on Saturday, come and hang out, come and be together as a core group of people so that we can go and, in that case, you know, exert ourselves into the community for the good of a community and for the good of our society. I mean, we could do more if, you know, we can do more. There's lots of stuff that we can do. So let's start here. Let's be good at this. Let's finish this out and let's do a good job with it and bless people. And one of the things that I wanted to say about the outreach is just like tangible is always easy. Tangible is always easy. It's easy to say, let me give you these things. You know, if you're at the outreach, go and talk to somebody. If you need pointers, ask Joni. Joni's very good at going to talk to everybody at the outreach. And just go and talk to them. Go and hang out with them. Go and be present in their lives and talk to them about the things that are important to them and the things that they're struggling with, and give them hope and give them life and give them the things that they do not come from us, but they come from the Jesus that we serve. They come from his peace. They come from his provision. They come from his power. We don't know how the words that we speak to the people that we interact with will change their lives because we don't know what kind of power God has. You know, I mean, God will give us the words to say, and his power will be present within us to them. And that's what we hope to do. That means so much more than the things, the tangible things that we can give to them.
This has been a podcast presentation of Hillside Foursquare Church in Reno, Nevada.